the obvious question from all of that is, if the immune system can do that, why doesn't it?
Well, I think it does. And the tumour finds ways of subverting it. First of all, one of the clear ways that the immune system fails to recognise a tumour cell is because the tumour cell downregulates the expression of surface proteins called HLA, human leukocyte antigen, also known as MHC, which essentially allow the body to distinguish between self and non-self. And due to the processes I mentioned earlier of genetic diversity and selection, you've got this sort of predator-prey relationship. The predator is the immune system and the prey is the tumour cell. Well, the tumour cell evolves to adapt and avoid the immune system by subverting those molecules on the cell surface that allow the immune system to recognise self from non-self. And that's one way that they can evade active predation by immune T cells.
Therefore, the solution being we just switch off that break on the immune system, and that ought to deal with, what, all cancers? Or do you think that there are going to be some that will probably respond, but we're going to find some that are impossible nuts to crack?
It's another great question, actually. The number of tumour types that are responding to these drugs continues to increase. Even tumour types I would have guessed a priori would not be sensitive to these drugs are, actually, particularly in the early disease setting. So even, for instance, estrogen receptor-positive breast cancer, recent data has shown that patients are responsive to immune checkpoint blockade, even though these tumours generally have quite a low number of mutations. And I think that really raises some very important questions about what the immune system is actually recognising in these tumour cells. I don't think we've really bottomed that out yet. And whilst mutations are part of what they're recognising, there are other things too going on that we don't fully understand yet.
As our confidence increases with gene editing,
yes,
are we into a regime or a realm yet where we could see ourselves thinking, well, we know what's gone wrong with the cancer cell, we know where those cells are, and we can target them, we think, pretty selectively. Could we go in and gene edit them in situ, and that would take the cancer and any metastatic deposits down? Or is that just too risky?
By the time a patient presents with cancer, particularly late-stage cancer, the burden of disease can be quite large. And that is, the number of cells can be very large indeed. Hundreds of millions of cells, billions of cells. And at death can be even larger than that. The challenge here is delivery. How does one deliver gene editing technology to that many cells? Because it only takes a few cells to escape, for resistance to emerge, for example. You would have to target every single cell, and that's a real challenge.
But that's where the immune system comes in. So we have a sort of multi-pronged approach to this. So we hit them with the gene edit, hit them with the immune checkpoint inhibitors so the immune system can wade in. So we're kind of attacking it on multiple fronts.
Yeah, I think that's right. That's potentially exactly the case. That may work. I think this is early days. Gene editing is still in its relative infancy. It's hugely exciting. But delivery continues to be one of the major problems for gene therapy, gene editing technologies. And it has been really since I was in training, and it continues to be.
Are we slightly, though, going about this the wrong way because we're trying to slam the door after the horse is well and truly bolted? Should we not really be putting as much energy as possible into diagnosing people really, really early and finding ways to stop it there when it hasn't turned into billions and billions of cells? Because by then the hairs are running. We're not going to get this back.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly the conclusion we've come to, that our work in TRACERx and many other investigators across the world have shown very similar things, that there are so many evolutionary paths through which these tumours can grow and adapt through, that in late-stage disease, achieving cures is going to be very difficult indeed. I mean, obviously, I never say never, but I think that makes us think, well, how can we achieve the maximum good for the maximum number of patients in a short sort of 20-year career? And I think what we're doing now is turning the lab towards, particularly at early diagnosis, as you mentioned, but actually one step further back from that, which is, as I said to you earlier, thinking about routes into prevention. How can you attenuate tissue inflammatory pathways to prevent cancer from occurring in the first place? What are those inflammatory pathways? Can we block them specifically such that they will reduce your risk of cancer, but still enable you, for instance, to fight infection? because that's one of the key problems, that, you know, these inflammatory pathways are there for a reason, to protect us from microbes from outside, viruses, bacteria, etc. So we'd have to do this in a subtle way that can prevent the cancer from forming whilst maintaining our ability to fight bacteria and other viruses, for example.
You've mentioned during this interview in a few cases where you've completely changed or revised your opinion or changed your mind about what was happening with this disease. What would you really, really like the answer to? If I could wave a magic lab Petri dish in front of you right now with the answer lurking inside it, what would you really like to have the answer to? Perhaps to finish your career with, saying, well, I solved that one. What's the really big one?
Okay, there is one question I really want to answer, and that is the following. I mentioned to you about work from Isaac Berenblum and Alan Balmain of the two-step model to cancer initiation, which is you need those mutations and you need the inflammatory mediator. The next question, which I think is going to take us the best part of a decade to solve, and we may never solve it, others will, is how do those two collaborate? What is the inflammatory mediator doing to that stem cell with that cancer mutation? I think there is a switch. And if there is a switch that's switched on in cancer, I want to find ways of switching it off. Because if we could do that, we can get to the proximal very first step in how this all starts and stop it, potentially even in the latest stage of disease.
And when you walk out of the crick in the evening, what do you do to switch off?
I don't switch off. I carry on thinking about that problem.
Well, you've got a bottle of Shiraz on the desk over there. Was that not helping?
Oh, I'm not sure I should really talk about that, but yes.
It's a Christmas present by the look of it.
Yes, it certainly does help. It certainly does help to switch off, but your mind still wanders back to these problems. You know, you wake up at 2 a.m. thinking about it, and sometimes you have your best ideas when you've switched off and you suddenly wake up and think, eureka, that's how you should do it. They don't happen quite as commonly as they used to maybe 20 years ago, but this is such an exciting job. It's very hard not to think about this. Even when you're relaxing. And even, you know, we spend a lot of time as scientists talking to other scientists socially, because that's what we do. We love this job. It's got real purpose and real practical impact.